I am Planta on the Line in Vancouver at thecommentary.ca. In 1924, around Christmas, Major Arthur Grosvenor Piddington buys a house in Victoria, B.C., in the suburb of Esquimalt for him and his family. 7 years later, my guest now, Helen Piddington, is born, the youngest of 10 children. In a new book, Rumbleseat, A Victorian Childhood Remembered, she recounts her fascinating, colorful childhood. The book is a charming look at an interesting family whose ways and experience provide some instruction as to how to keep house and more. Helen's mother is thought of as the brain of the family, while her father, the passion. With great detail and over 100 pieces of memory, Helen Piddington captivates with her stories and gives us these great glimpses into a time gone by. What's kept alive in this book has been described as a valuable addition to the social history of British Columbia. Rumbleseat is from Harbor Publishing. Helen Piddington is a renowned printmaker and artist. Her previous book was The Inlet. Please welcome to the Planta Online program from Loughborough Inlet, Helen Piddington. Good morning, Ms. Piddington.
Good morning.
Thanks for joining us.
My pleasure.
How should we read this book? I mean, it's not a chronological tale, is it?
No, it was really written as a series of letters to a friend who was interested in my childhood, and I never really had a chance to have a good long talk about it, because whenever we met, we were so busy with, you know, immediate talk that we never had time for such long things. So I wrote them as if writing to her, and then, of course, they weren't sent, but they accumulated into this book. They can be read anyway, you know, picked up and read bit by bit, or if you prefer to read them stem to gudgeon, that's fine, too.
Yeah. Growing up, did you want to write?
Not really. I was drawing all the time. But I went to, much against my will, for my last 3 years of school, to a boarding school. And every Saturday, we had an essay to write. We didn't know what it would be till we got into the gymnasium. We all sat in little desks, and we wrote for about an hour and a half. And that came to me to say my favorite thing, and I didn't really think about it much. But I've always written lots and lots of letters, and I've just came upon writing. I wanted to write about this place. My first book was about the old-timers, and then there wasn't enough about the old-timers, so my publisher asked me to write about how it was living here, and that's what I did in the inlet. But I really want to write all the time.
Yeah. And to go back to the childhood, was that important to you? Did you have to do that?
I was very glad. Yes, I did. Once I started, it was really thanks to Doris Lessing's comment when she was being interviewed by Eleanor Martel, and I just felt she was speaking what I have always thought, that I must keep certain memories as touchstones. And it all came back to me, the walk through the field in the snow and on from there. As I'm the 10th child in the family, the last child, I had quite a few siblings to refer to, and it just became more and more fascinating as I wrote it.
Now, can we say that yours was a happy childhood?
Oh, marvelous, yes.
Yeah.
Esquimalt was an absolutely delightful place to grow up in because I was the only child not to have a nanny when I was little. I was brought up by my mother, and as she was very busy cooking and doing things that she'd never expected to do, and my father was busy too, I had a lot of time alone, and we were allowed to go exploring from about the age of 5 on, along the sea edge and through the woods, and it was quite a magical childhood.
It was a privileged one for your siblings, I guess, but then by the time you came around, what happened there?
Well, my father lost almost everything he had in poor investments or investments that went terribly sour. And, the Depression had a lot of effect on his finances. And so he had to grow most of our food and we had horses because he'd always had horses. And he tried to earn money teaching people how to ride. But if he knew them, he didn't ask them to pay. And if he didn't know them, he was usually sorry for them and didn't charge them. So, it was a strange childhood because we had a lovely house. But we hardly had a bean. And we were just very lucky to get by.
The house that you lived in Esquimalt, that's the house that was designed by Samuel McClure, right?
Yes. There were two built side by side in 1909, and ours was on the corner of Lampson Street and Witchbury, and the other one is the Old England Inn, it calls itself now. It used to be Rosemead. But ours was during the war, my parents, when they lost two boys, and they had two more sons, and they thought they'd have to make a sacrifice, and so they knew that housing was desperately needed, and so they simply had our house cut up into 9 apartments by the wartime housing and what have you board, and then the rents were stuck from the mid-40s until the late 50s, by which time, you know, they were sort of $40 for a large apartment, and my parents couldn't even pay the taxes or heat the place for that. So it was torn down and the land sold.
And the interesting part in the book is that you can go back in your mind.
Yes.
Yeah, and it's fascinating because you write that back to us in the book, and we can go along with you up the drive and through the rooms.
Yes, yes. Well, yes, I'm hearing by degrees back from relations, and they seemed so far pretty happy with it and delighted to have a record that they otherwise wouldn't have. I do go back much farther than my childhood because there were things, my parents both were Quebecers and they didn't want to come to the West Coast at all, but they did to be near my mother's twin sister when she was widowed. And in the end, they were delighted to have moved, but you know, it was a huge adjustment for them.
And in reading the book, the Quebec part seems very much a part of their lives. You were born here.
Yes.
Is there any part of you that's still back there, do you think?
Oh, we were brought up to think that Quebec was the center of the world, and sure it is. I think I make that quite clear in near the beginning. But, yes, it was I'm really a person of the West Coast. I'm glad that we were born here. I think our lives would have been utterly different. We would have been expected to go to the Île d'Orléans for every occasion, Christmas, you know, summer holidays, and we wouldn't have had the freedom to have our own lives. I mean, we were really extraordinarily lucky. And unlucky at the same time to other people. We were unlucky, but to us we were extraordinarily lucky. So I'm delighted, I'm fascinated by the history of Quebec, and I love going there, but I'm a person of the West Coast.
Yeah. Do you, back to the house there.
Yes?
How do you pronounce it, Witchbury?
Witchbury.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's no longer there. Do you still go past the property, though?
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
An aching heart.
Yeah.
I've been twice into the house next door, and the first time I went, there was a little green gate that gave access from one property to the other, and it seemed a bit bizarre to think that there'd be a gate between two totally separate houses, but it was lovely going through that gate. And the second time I went, it had become quite a fancy restaurant and a, you know, place to stay. Sort of a tourist attraction, and the gate was gone, so that sort of closed the chapter for me at that point. But no, it's still in my mind. It's still in all our minds.
Yeah. Now your mother is described as the brain of the family, and she gave you some great advice. The piece of advice that I've been thinking about since I've read the book is: if you ever need help, you ask the busiest person you know.
Have you tried that?
I was thinking about it, and that's so true. And any time that I've needed help in anything, you always go to the person who's the busiest.
Yes.
Because it gets done. Stuff gets done.
Yes.
Yeah. She never had a job, right, your mother?
Well, she was a painter, and she wanted to paint, and she did paint quite as much as she possibly could. But, you know, she was enormously busy.
Yeah, keeping house, right?
And I suppose you could say one of her jobs was meeting all the trains in Cannes during the First War.
Yeah.
And giving things, whatever she could find in the market, flowers or writing paper or whatever, to the foreign troops going through Cannes.
Do you wonder what she would have ended up like had she grown up or lived in another era?
Oh, it's hard to know. I'd like to think she would have had more time to paint.
Yeah.
But maybe not. You know, families come up and they go up and down like yo-yos. And there's no telling what people will do in different generations.
Yeah. Now, your dad, he was in the military, right?
Yes, he was. He was top student at RMC, and then he could choose his regiment, and he didn't really have any idea about any knowledge of fighting. It was the joining the what he called a crack regiment that interested him. So he was in the Royal Horse Artillery, Royal Horse Artillery, and then but he had promised his father that when he died that he would come back and look after his two eldest sisters, who neither of they were unmarried, so having promised his father suddenly upped and died quite early, and Dad simply gave up his commission and came back to Quebec, much to the fury of his sisters and the rage of his officers, who blacklisted him. And when he wanted to join up again, they put him in the Royal Field Artillery, which was quite a different, you know, it was a good regiment, but it didn't have the prestige of the Royal Horse Artillery. But it undoubtedly saved his life, although it was grim fighting in Greece. I'm sure it saved his life.
Yeah. He just seems like a fun guy in the book.
Oh, he was.
Yeah.
He was. He was lots of fun, but infuriating. I mean, he had full of crazy ideas, like social credit and moving us all to Russia and, you know, in the middle of the 30s.
Yeah. Yeah, in the back of the book you talk about all these fads, that he would eat certain things because he'd read something about how good it was, and then
a week later
he'd forget about it.
Well, he'd have to put it aside because something else had taken its place.
That's right, yeah.
He was lots of fun, but he was infuriating and embarrassing and all sorts of things. But, you know, I really appreciate him more now probably than when we were young, because he was quite noisy.
Yeah.
No,
go ahead.
I was going to say, when we went to town, we had this huge old Packard, and he'd be driving two or three of us to town, and we'd pick up people all the way along until the car was full, and people were on the running boards going into Victoria. And Dad would be singing at the top of his lungs, or telling them, giving them some sort of financial advice, or discussing politics, and it was terribly embarrassing for us as kids.
Yeah. He taught you, and you say this in the book, above all else, adaptability. And
yes,
And in looking back, in growing up in the era that you did, the Depression, mm-hmm. and then the war years, with the parents that you had, things seemed to be fine. And I think there's something instructive there about, for those of us in this generation, say, growing up now, mm-hmm. about adapting to circumstance and just keep going, right?
Yes, yes. I mean, you have to make do. I know I hurt a friend's feelings by saying that her father did what he could, but I mean, that's what you. There were so many. Everybody had to do what they could and the best they could do, because it was very difficult. And there were lots of positive things too. And certainly the Depression strengthened everyone for the ghastly war years, I think, anyway.
Yeah, and you never lost your optimism, it seems, all of you.
No, I don't think so. We had lots of fun together, and we had battles royal within amongst the siblings, but we were good friends, for the most part, very good friends.
Yeah. How many of your siblings are still with us?
I have two sisters and a brother.
Yeah.
The eldest and the next two up from me.
And how often do you guys see each other?
We don't see each other often, but we phone a lot.
Yeah.
So that's good.
Who are you more like, your mother or your father?
I think I'm more like my mother. I'm not sure.
I'm not sure.
She was adaptable too. She could, you know. She had been. They'd both been very, very spoilt, because they'd come from wealthy families and they expected servants to do things. Mother was always interested in other people's ideas and fitted in with anybody. But they were quite amazing how they managed entirely alone. You know, I think I said somewhere in the book that I never noticed who lit the fires in all the bedrooms and the rooms, the fireplaces, and who took the ash out and the wood in or the coal in. It just was done so gracefully that we were unaware, and yet they did it.
Yeah.
You know, and they had never done anything like that. I mean, Mum had never cooked anything. So we were very lucky. We had very good examples.
Yeah. There are a couple of pieces in the book where you talk about race and how your family, I mean, you had Chinese servants and gardeners, right?
Just one gardener.
One, Tim, right?
And occasionally a cook.
Yeah.
And we loved them dearly. And I'm sorry, what do you want to say?
Well, Tim the gardener, I mean, the piece on him and how much you loved him.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just a beautiful piece.
He's just darling. And what struck me is that how they looked after each other. You know, they would hire each other, and if somebody didn't, there was a marvelous sense of contentment all through those hard times from them, from the ones we knew well, and from the vegetable man Louis Wei who came. He just glowed this sort of sense of contentment because they knew they were sending money back to their families who were otherwise starving, and they were just. They radiated a sort of central sort of happiness. I don't know whether that was just a facade. I don't think it could have been just a facade, but they were just, we loved them dearly. And I think it was quite different in Vancouver. I don't know.
Yeah. And coming to Vancouver, was that a big deal back in the day?
Yes, it was. You mean the little bit I wrote about Vancouver?
Yeah.
Well, it was...
I mean, it turned out differently, but I mean, thinking about coming here and
oh, it's so exciting,
yeah,
thrilling, and then we, you know, to be having a stateroom was just marvelous, and then to find all the stateroom have been taken over by the army, and there were no chair, very few chairs to sit on. We were about several hundred girls going to this conference. It was a fascinating experience, but it was one we were glad. When it was over and we got home to have food and warmth and even school, you know.
Yeah. How many books did you guys have in the house?
Hundreds and hundreds.
Yeah.
And we have here, too, in this log cabin.
Yeah, do you think that the importance of books in your life, do you think that came from your parents? I mean, it obviously
absolutely,
did.
Absolutely. Yes.
Yeah.
We had lovely books and people, you know, Mum read to us a lot. And I read to my own children a lot. And they love books. Well, my son doesn't love them quite as much, unless they're about certain subjects that interest him. But my daughter just absolutely delights in books.
Yeah.
And so do our grandchildren.
And the radio. I mean, that played an important part in your growing up. And it still does today?
Oh, sure. Yes, yes, yes. I had to give in and have TV when the kids were in school, in boarding school. Because everybody, I didn't want it, but they're fascinating things on TV, but I much prefer radio if I give them my druthers.
The cover photo,
yes?
That's your dad's Packard, right?
Yes.
Are you in here?
I am. I'm right in the middle. My mother has a black hat on, a navy blue or black, I'm not sure because I can't remember. And I'm just peeking under the brim of that hat.
Yeah.
But there are four of us missing in the photo.
The taking pictures. I mean, there's some wonderful pictures in the book, and they're very different than the photos that we're used to. Because I mean, photos from the 30s and the 40s, even the 50s, seem, you know, the very, very formal photographs. Yet there are pictures of your dad in here, you know, him chopping wood or you know, on a horse or something. That just are candid, and they almost look like they could come alive.
Well, everybody was moving around, you know. You had to take quick snaps.
Yeah.
So, and I think my brother Jamie took the one on the cover. He was an excellent photographer. But unfortunately, he didn't live beyond 1943.
And so the photographs, do they add something to memory, do you think?
Of course. Yes, yes, yes.
Yeah. There's an essay in the book that I really loved, and it's about Christmas. Christmas is around the corner now. It's such a delight to read about Christmas in the Piddington house. Well, what's Christmas like for you today? Is it much the same?
is, only we haven't got space enough to hide the tree, so we've always had the tree. We cut the tree on Christmas Eve and decorate it that night, and then we have our stockings in front of the fireplace. So it's all in one room, you know, whereas at home, the tree could be hidden and out of view entirely until Christmas night after dinner. And my husband's family always had their crackers at the beginning of the meal, and that goes against the grain, but I have to give in on that. You have to make adjustments. But otherwise, we have a sort of as formal a meal as we can for Christmas dinner and stockings at breakfast time, and you know, we have champagne and breakfast, too. And we didn't have that in our house, but it's pretty well the same. Not as grand.
Yeah, you must miss your parents, especially at this time, do you?
I have got used to not having them, but they're in my head, you know, and they're in my heart and in my head, so they're not very far away. And this writing this brought them all back.
Yeah, it's such a delightful book, Helen. I've enjoyed it, as I said, reading it, and I've enjoyed the conversation today. I hope a lot of people buy this because it's just a wonderful book. And I think I read somewhere someone wrote of the book that it's a great contribution to the social history of British Columbia.
Well, I hope they will read it. I don't know. I had quite a hard time getting a publisher.
Yeah,
I think the one that. They were very brave to do it. But people have had an extraordinary reaction to the book, so I'm delighted. So I hope you're right.
Yeah. Continued good luck with the book, Helen.
Thank you so much.
You're very welcome. The book is called Rumble Seat, A Victorian Childhood Remembered. It's from Harbor Publishing. It's a charming book, one I've enjoyed reading. I hope you all buy it this holiday season. It's author Helen Piddington on the line in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Plata.